Good morning. I'm Mr. Homemaker, and this is Mornings with the Misses.
So happy to be here, Marcus.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so it's like 5 a.m. This is what we do with our mornings. This morning, I wanted to talk about a topic that I feel is gaining a lot of traction. I feel like on like a lot of podcasts I'm listening to, other parents I'm talking with, the concept of invisible labor. And it comes as no surprise to you, I have thoughts on this. So do you think that you could describe what invisible labor is and why people are talking about it?
I feel like you should introduce why people are talking about it. I mean, we've discussed a little bit before how running a household, although this would apply elsewhere, but running a household involves a lot of constant planning and preparation and troubleshooting and like triaging as things emerge. Right. But also there's some routine things, which is where we focused in the past of like every week we need to go to the grocery store. How are we going to figure out what are we going to eat this week? And,
right,
you know, who needs what in their lunches and all that stuff. And so all of the like identifying needs,
right,
and determining how we will meet those needs is invisible work that's being done in somebody's head.
Right.
It is less obvious, visible, tangible than like the actual cooking the meal.
Right. I think it's so important, and I think it's a very real thing, and I think it's a very real thing that, at least from my perspective, I think tends to fall on moms for a number of reasons, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I have a very vivid memory of, like, I didn't know what it was called at the time, but it was this exact topic where when you were, like, our before life, when we were both working crazy hours, you were working out of the house, and, like, and I think it actually may have even been when we were both going into the office all the time, like, back before COVID.
Yeah.
And there was a moment at which I was like, I can't carry this all in my head anymore. Like, I don't have the decision. I don't have any more decision space in my head to be able to think through these things. And I couldn't characterize it. And I feel like now that people have been talking about this invisible labor, especially as I'm seeing dads on Instagram, like there's this one dad that talks a lot about it. And like, hey, like recognize, like, don't just step up to do the task, but recognize all the things that come with that. But I think there's actually a lot more complexity than people are recognizing there.
I'm interested to hear more about what complexity you think there is.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think so people are basically saying like, hey, dads, step up. You can't just like swoop in and make the meal. Like, that's nice, but that's not taking over the burden of like the entire burden of an activity. And so I think that a couple of things kind of come in here, right? Like, one is I think that unless you figure out a way in your household to share that experience, it's going to be really hard for your partner, regardless of who does the thing, to be able to even understand what the invisible labor means,
right?
So like, when we first started and you became stay at home, like the first, one of the first weeks of our experiment of like, can we do this, was like, you kind of followed me and had me do the thing that I was doing.
Yeah.
I think that what was really great about that was that you asked to do that, because it would be super awkward for me to be like, you want to do the meal? Why don't you follow me for a week? Like, that's like incredibly condescending. So the fact that you were like, let me see how you do it.
Yeah.
Was really helpful. And we like walked step by step. We're like, how do you do the kids' laundry? Like, what laundry detergent do you use, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that the first thing was like figuring out a process by which like
Yes. And so just to add on to that before we move on, two things that drove me to that is I realized in the lead up to like me going on sabbatical and us like starting the experimental phase is you and I had several conversations about who was doing what and why I wasn't doing certain things.
Yeah.
And it sort of came to the surface that like a lot of it was, and I think we caught some audio of us discussing this when it came to like laundry. So I'm like, I am so paralyzed by it. I have no idea how your system works or like what the state of the system is.
Right.
And I was just like, because particularly when I was just away from the house for the vast majority of the day, I come home and they're like, are clothes in places. And it is not always entirely clear, like, is this clean but not yet folded, or is this dirty?
Right.
Or like, is, you know, the different things like that.
Because it was all, it was in my head, right? Like, yeah. I would know, like, okay, well, the pink laundry basket today is full of clean laundry right. because I've got to fold it, but I didn't have time because we were crazy busy. And so.
And so we had sort of like brought to the surface through conversation that like there were just a bunch of gaps in like my understanding of what was in your head.
Right.
And like, only slowly did I gain a recognition of like those known unknowns. And only slowly, I think, did you gain a realization that like, oh, like it's not possible for me to know what is in your head.
Right.
And so like I my ability to jump in was curtailed by like that information was not available to me.
Right.
But then the second thing is, and again, like this is an extreme solution. I mean, not extreme, like irrational, but extreme, like there would be other techniques I would imagine, but I thought it would be the most clean and like sort of scientific to say, like, let's eliminate the variables of miscommunication in a way and just say, let's say laundry. I'm just going to do all the laundry this week or this month or whatever. I don't want you to do any laundry because that's the only way that I will know for sure. I understand the whole system and not some things are continuing to be a mystery to me and I just don't know. I don't know them.
Right.
So anyway, so that's how we early a year ago, like started to really deliberately say, let's break ourselves out of our, our like sort of frames, like very consciously and deliberately. And in that sort of all the way to the other extreme, at least on a trial basis kind of thing.
And I think like, so one of the things that I recognized now that we've kind of, that we've done that and we are doing that is the how difficult the limited knowledge is. So for instance, like I feel like wives, we can tend to be like I remember having this conversation with other moms. Oh my God, not you. Oh my God, my husband is such an idiot. How does he not know like what to feed our kid for snack? Like I do this all the time. Until I was the one that was working and you had been, and I had not packed his lunch and you were the one that did the lunch and it was time for afternoon snack. And I realized I had to ask you what do you think I should feed him? Like, has he had 7 squeezy packs today? Did he already eat an apple and an orange?
Not that that's a thing we routinely do, but we're trying to not over index on certain foods that like we know he likes.
Right.
We're trying to introduce different foods. And if you haven't been the one involved up to that point in the day.
Right.
You're coming in like, wait, where are we
yeah.
in what he's eating and not eating? And so like you realized as you had to ask that question, like, oh,
right.
The reverse is also true. If I'm the one feeding him all day, you're going to have to ask me.
Or like the laundry, I'm like going upstairs and like smelling the laundry. Like, is this clean? Because like it's not in the dryer anymore, which means we've definitely done an extra load. And so I think that that's kind of one thing is just like being open on both sides to recognizing like the invisible labor that your partner is doing. But that also that when you are the person doing that stuff, your partner is at a knowledge disadvantage. And like, it's not because they're idiots or they don't want to be involved. So it's like, that's not the thing they're doing. And so I think that that's like one pitfall that I think you got to be really careful with.
And sometimes I think people think this is like, actually I had a conversation like this recently where I was trying, describing a phenomenon like this. And somebody's reaction was like, yes, I am very familiar with this character flaw in my husband. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right.
This is not a character flaw. This is like the human condition.
Right.
This is a universal problem that people suffer from. You can learn to overcome it. But this is a, like on one of those like lists of cognitive biases that like affect people subconsciously is the curse of knowledge, which is just Googled. And so like, according to Wikipedia, that is, it occurs when an individual who is communicating with another individual unwittingly, right? Like subconsciously assumes that the other individual has the same background knowledge and understands the context.
Right.
In which I'm trying to communicate.
Right.
Like you bake in, like, because you're saying what you think you need to say in the context you already have. And you're taking for granted that you also share that context.
Right.
But the other person does not, rarely has the same context you do.
Right.
And so if you're not deliberately saying, let me make sure you understand where we're at. Now let me tell you what I think we should do next. If you just say, I think we should do this next. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
I have no framework in which to process this. So like you and I have both, like, this is a thing that affects all people. This is a thing that we struggle with. Yeah. And this is a good example of how that can become like, it's a very small pebble in the, like the gears of like healthy communication in a marriage that like really grinds your gears.
Right.
If you're not like, oh, we should really get on the same page about this.
Yeah. And not just on the same page, like, so other examples, right, of like where there, cause I think the food thing comes up a lot, but like where there could be invisible work is like, both meal planning and like lunch packing and that kind of, that whole like feeding of the family is one thing.
Yeah.
There's also, the schedule.
And logistics.
There's also like tangible things like planning for birthday parties and, or like travel and a trip, like all of the things that go into like who researched where you're going and looked at kid friendly activities that you were going to be able to do and thought about what needed to be packed and the person who actually packed it and who's like how you're getting to the airport and like all of the things that happen that are part of that. A lot of that is like research or planning that has gone on like behind the scenes. And it takes up a lot of like mental space and planning. Now, the flip side of this is, so say you have a partner who is awesome and steps up and says like, yeah, like I want to take this on, right?
Hypothetically.
Now, moms, this is where I think we completely fail our partners, which is if you are telling your husband, I need help, I need you to take on this thing, then you need to let them take on that thing. This is not an opportunity now to criticize the way in which your partner is doing this thing. If you're asking your partner to take on meals and meal planning, you have to let it go. And you cannot constantly question what your partner's doing. I think like that is a recipe for disaster. Your husband wasn't like questioning you and how you did meal planning or laundry or whatever. So, but I think in order to prepare for that and in order to kind of transition that, you have to have a conversation about what you value in that thing. What do you each value? So again, let's go to the meal planning example. One of the things that I found is moms are like, yeah, but if I let my husband do the meal planning, it's just going to be mac and cheese and hot dogs all the time. And I think like stereotypically, like, yeah, like I remember my dad growing up when my dad was in charge of dinner because my mom worked at a hospital. So she worked late nights, like a couple nights a week. We like loved it. My dad was like, it was like pancake dinner. It was like mac and cheese and and hamburgers. Like my dad had a small repertoire of things he cooked. So when you're starting that conversation, start to talk about I know one thing that's important for a lot of moms, myself included, is like nutrition, right? Like the nutritional value and a balanced meal and making sure we're getting enough, you know, vegetables and greens in our diet. But like, you need to talk about that with your husband and talk about like what that looks like to you, right? Like, but also being willing to let go a little bit because like, if your kids have mac and cheese someday, like, and they don't get a green, it's okay. And I think that a lot of times, like, and by the way, you as the mom used to make those choices sometimes and you didn't like have anybody questioning you, right? Like you had a fast night, the kids came home late from soccer or whatever, and you're like, okay, we're just doing pizza. But you're gonna, I think a lot of times where moms will be like, well, of course he went and got pizza. Like, it's like, but you had that decision space. Yeah. So making sure that you're like having those conversations of like, What does it ideally look like? And coming to agreement on, so how are we going to execute this? Like, right, what is ideal and how can we try to carry that out and have it be balanced on a day-to-day basis? But then also like understanding the underlying reasons that might be. So one example that I heard the other day was a woman was working late and her husband was making dinner. And so she called to check in. It was like for their toddler. And she's like, oh, what did you end up making for dinner? And he tells her, and she's like, so no protein. And the guy gets really angry, right? Like here he is like trying his best to do what he was going to do.
She swoops in and critiques him.
Right. Yeah. And I think, and I get that. And so the advice that the podcaster was giving or the guest was like, well, you know, like you try to like in the moment, like, to diffuse this. And I think it's because he probably works more with men. But he was like, you know, try to say, like, well, so it sounds like having protein in the meal is important to you.
Like, you're saying the host or the sort of advisor to this dad was advising the dad, not the mom. Mm-hmm. And saying, when your wife reacts this way, yeah, here's how you can diffuse that.
Right.
So this was not advice for the woman.
Right. I think it's dumb.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's consistent with the typical advice you hear of, like in order to, let me jump to the punchline. I think it's dumb too, but I want to defend it a little bit, which is, you want to not react emotionally and defensively before you even really, like, make sure you understand what the person's saying. Right. So if nothing else, you want to, like, maintain composure long enough to be like, one, did I understand what you're trying to communicate to me effectively? And then, like, two, like, do you realize, like, that you're coming off real rude? Do you want to try that again? I mean, I sometimes say stuff like that. You don't like it when I say stuff like that, but I think it's a better alternative to, like, this conversation's over and I'm just furious.
Yeah.
And so, like, trying to diffuse, like, do I really understand you? And do you realize how you're coming off?
Right.
Like, let's reset here.
Right.
Before we, like, have a fight about nothing or have a fight about the wrong thing, right, or blow up at each other or stonewall each other or whatever. Like, if you're trying to avoid going off the rails.
And I think, like, a better, like, my suggestion to that approach would be, like, as opposed to be like, do you realize, like, you are coming off as rude, is to flip that about, like, this is where I would soften it and say, like, so I just want to let you know, like, that felt very aggressive to me, or that felt very rude, or that, how did that make you feel? As opposed to, like, you are being,
I statements.
Yes.
I feel like you're unjustifiedly criticizing me.
Yeah. Or just like, hey, that felt like a critique. I don't know if you meant it that way, but that felt like aggressive. And then, like, that would diffuse me. I'd be like, oh, hey, like, I realized that was kind of critical, or I didn't mean it that way, or I'm really sorry. Hmm. It's, like, easier for someone to be able to then, like, apologize and reset, as opposed to, like, you, like, almost saying, like, this is your character flaw, which it is, but, like, you know, like, being able to say, hey, that, you know, so anyway.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think we're trying to strike a balance here. All of this, like, communication and conflict resolution advice, it often comes off real cheesy.
Yeah.
And especially when they're
disingenuous.
And disingenuous. Yeah. And particularly when they're trying to, like, artificially tell you, like, here's what you should do. Like, that isn't the words you're telling me to come out of my mouth do not correspond to the thoughts going on in my head.
Right.
So it feels fake.
Yeah.
But part of it, so you do have to take this step back and say, recognize that sometimes you jump into being in a confrontational step, like, it's premature. It's not productive,
right,
and it's not even, like, rational or justified. And so you do have to, like, develop a, like, an additional step in your thought process of, when your first reaction is to be angry, you should be like, realizing yourself, I'm not,
right,
like, I'm going into a bad place,
right,
before I, like, let my hand off the wheel, just let this happen, let me make sure I'm, like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's, I think we're both in agreement, it can come off fake, and if you are just, like, robotically,
right,
regurgitating, like, I'm supposed to say this.
Right. But also, for me, like, if I were the woman and you were like, it sounds like it's important that we have protein in our kid's diet, I'd be like, I feel it's important. Like, that feels like really, like, rude.
Well, it's like, that's like the boilerplate, like, active listening. And I'm reflecting back to
right.
You. So I'm hearing, it sounds like you're saying
like
you
what
care
you're
about
saying
protein.
Is, right. It's like, yeah, so does any idiot that should be feeding their children. Yeah. But I have a solution.
Go. I can't wait.
I think we should teach people the glass jar method.
No, glass jar.
So it has not, we have not yet fully launched this because we've been doing a lot of inputting, but we haven't actually used it.
I predict that we're going to sit right here and we're going to open it up. Yeah.
But I think, so one of the things that we've been doing is, like, and especially in that moment, right, where, like, the mom was calling home. So, like, it's not like you have to then be in the space with this person.
Yeah.
But you're like, you know, you can express in that moment, like, look, like, this kind of felt, I felt like you were, like, attacking me unjustly, or that really felt rude in the way that you asked that. An approach that we've been taking, and I don't think it's always when we're, like, upset. Sometimes it's just, like, a situation that happens we want to recall, but
yeah,
we have these little slips of paper. Marcus uses them much more than I do, where you'll like write down like the situation or something that you want to trigger for a conversation later. Yeah. So that you have that conversation when it's not in the heat of the moment, when you're both like able to be reasonable. And that's when you're going to talk about, hey, so like a week ago when I was making dinner, like I made mac and cheese and whatever. And you mentioned that like you wanted to see more protein in the meal. So I want to talk to you a little bit about like what does an ideal dinner look like to you and why? Because one of the things they talked about is like, there may be a reason behind something that you may find out about your partner that you never knew. So like maybe your a partner like has a history of some kind of health issue. And so like in their family, so they are trying to make sure like they have maybe even an irrational fear of like red meat or but again, fat like whether, in their diet.
Whether it's rational or irrational, again, that's like something they're carrying around as a background context.
Right.
And so there's a dissonance because they're assuming that you do or should have that same context that they have.
Right. Or
and
maybe
so bringing that to the surface is going to help communication.
Or it might be like your partner grew up as a heavy kid and they are just so like hellbent on not letting your kid be bullied through something similar that they're like, you know, I want to make sure that they eat a lot of vegetables and a lot of fruit and like we go very light on blah, blah, blah. But if your partner doesn't know that, or like maybe they grew up like poor and so in the flip side is like they want to have like a heavy meat at every meal because that wasn't something they grew up with and they feel like that's an important part of like building muscle and like making and it represents having an abundance in your house. All of these things are things that we carry with us, but like you and I don't like talk about like that's why I want the meal to be this way. And I think if you recognize why your partner is going in that direction, it's easier to either get on board or to talk about like, well, that makes sense, but let's now talk about like rationally.
Yeah.
Okay. So would it be okay if we did it four nights a week? We had this, but like sometimes we don't and it's still balanced and healthy or how can I offset on that day or whatever it is. Yeah. So I think like that is like, I think having those conversations, doing it not in that moment, but being able to explain, and this goes for all kinds of invisible work, right? It's like, why are you, is there a reason you're doing it that way and why? The flip side is, hey moms, you gotta let some stuff go. Like there is no rational reason that you would do laundry a certain way other than like, maybe it's like, well, I want the towels folded this way. Does it matter? Like, maybe it really does to you. Maybe the aesthetic of like your home and, but like, you gotta know where to give and to be like, if you want your partner to do and take on this thing, you have to let them do and take on this thing in its entirety. Yeah. And so just be, and that's harder, I think, for the mom because we've typically been doing all of it. So we have established a way in which we do things because we've been doing it the whole time. And so, I think just like, that I don't think that comes to light. I think people are putting a lot of fault, particularly on the dads, because usually it's the dads that haven't been doing the invisible work. And I feel like we got to like, you got to recognize that there's a give and take there. You don't get to dictate how everything in your home is done if you want someone else to take on how some things in your home are done.
I want to say something.
Yeah.
On a future, Mr. Homemaker.
This whole invisible work thing, I want to devil's advocate it a little bit. Yeah. I don't want you to get mad at me.
I'm probably going to get mad about it. Go ahead.
Like you're inviting men to be like, listen, you're proving my point.
Right.
You're never satisfied but no matter what I do.
Right.
You're just saying instead of at work, supervisor, you're saying your wife. I was like, so this is condescending on multiple dimensions.